18 more people have passed away now after they were left off the official waiting list for health care at the Phoenix Veterans Affairs Hospital. The VA Inspector General is investigating to see if long wait times caused those deaths. Phil Carter is Senior Fellow, Counsel, and Director of the Military Veterans and Society Program at the Center for a New American Security. He writes in Slate about six ways to reform the VA health care system and restore public trust. Phil, it's always great to have you on the program. You get at something here before we get to your list of six that I think is really important. You write, the ideal candidate to replace Eric Shinseki would probably fuse the best traits of a general like Shinseki, a politician like Bill Clinton, and a businessman like Lee Iacocca or Mitt Romney. My sense is that as people talk about somebody to replace Secretary Shinseki, they're looking for a one type of individual. Well, you're proposing this fusion of three. Why are you going in that direction, Phil?
The VA is a massive agency. It's the largest healthcare enterprise in the country. It's the second largest cabinet agency. It's also an intensely political agency, not in a partisan sense, but in a classic political science sense in terms of how many resources it allocates and how many stakeholders' lives it touches. And so I think you need a leader who can lead a massive agency of 300,000 employees, more than 300,000, to engage with the public and the Hill and the press and others to handle the complex politics of the agency. And three, at this point, you need a really savvy business person, and ideally someone who's got a ton of healthcare experience and understands the unique aspects of running a massive health enterprise.
The first thing that you propose in on your list of six ways to begin to fix the VA is give the VA the resources it needs. On the surface, it sounds like that's just more money. But as I read what you're writing, it sounds like it gets deeper than that.
The VA has gotten massive budget increases over the last 12 years, even as the overall population of veterans has declined. But below the surface, the VA has also had increasingly more veterans use its services. So the VA's budget increases have been great, but they haven't actually kept pace with increasing demand for VA services, the increasing cost of health care, and changing nature of the services that veterans are asking for. The median veteran age right now is 64. And so as veterans are aging, and the majority of them are hitting retirement age, they're placing new demands on the system and asking for more and more in the way of support from the VA.
And that's why I think that the number dialogue, I'm glad to see it hasn't descended to a pure numbers conversation on Capitol Hill. The bill that Senator Sanders and Senator McCain are proposing add $500 million, I believe the figure is, for hiring more doctors and nurses at the VA. But some of the numbers that are thrown around in the more general conversation about this, between 2000 and 2013, VA outlays nearly tripled while the population of veterans declined by 4.3 million. Those numbers, according to a story that we'll link later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, so you can check the source on that. But those are the kinds of numbers that people are throwing around, and that's why I went to your point that it resources on the surface sounds like more money, but really that's not all there is to it.
That's right. The key metrics here that matter are not overall agency resources. It's dollars spent for a veteran that's coming through the door and using those services. So if there are 20 million veterans today and there were 25 10 years ago, the VA budget may still need to go up if more of those veterans proportionally are using the VA for healthcare. And healthcare costs society-wide have gone up. The VA bears those burdens too.
That leads us to the second point on your list, which is allocating VA resources more smartly. And you point out something here, Phil, that I don't think I've seen anybody else address when it comes to not only the composition of the veterans today, but the way that we should respond to them. And that is the transition that we're seeing that's taken place because of the all-volunteer force.
That's right. We right now are seeing essentially the generational passing of the torch. Next year or the year after, Gulf War era veterans will overtake Vietnam veterans as the largest segment of the veterans community. These populations put very different demands on the system. Older veterans tend to come in for a lot of chronic treatable conditions. Younger veterans come in, and they look to, number one, musculoskeletal treatment for the strains of carrying body armor or the strains of service. Two, mental health. And three, sort of a non-specified cluster of symptoms that a lot of VA clinicians is essentially equivalent to Gulf War Syndrome 2. So two very different treatment profiles, and the VA has to figure out a way to balance those two at the same time, recognizing that it's not going to have this massive cohort of veterans forever, and so there may be a limit to the kinds of investments the VA may want to make. They may not want to go with a lot of brick-and-mortar hospitals. They may want to go to leasing options or short-term provider networks wherever possible.
I talked to a guy today on the phone, Phil, who was telling me about organizing his units, his Vietnam unit's 50th anniversary. And I mean, blew my mind that we're on the cusp of that, but we are. And as we were talking about that, he made a point that in very striking terms that gets right at the heart of what you're talking about. He said, we didn't have body armor. The guys that came home with me from Desert Storm, we would have left them in, or they would have come home in a casket from Vietnam.
That's right. Survivability rates for combat today have gone through the roof thanks to body armor improvements and medevac and lots of other reasons. But these take a toll too. And service members today serve for much longer in uniform than during previous wars. The typical inductee or enlistee in the Vietnam era served 2 years, 3 years, you know, one enlistment of duty. Today's veterans averaging closer to 7 or 8 years of service, and that takes a toll.
The third point on your list is restructuring the VA healthcare system. And you write, the VA divides its health system of 151 hospitals and 820 clinics into 23 regions that don't align with any other geographic scheme within the federal government. How would a more logical system work, and what would it look like, Phil?
This is a great question, and I don't want to be the classic think tank guy that just throws out organizational redesign and strategy as the answer, but the VA's got a real tension between how much control it wants the central office to have versus how much control it wants the hospitals to have. And many years ago, the decision was made to put as much decision authority in the hospitals, and the hospitals evolved into sort of 150-plus decentralized fiefdoms around the country with no central control. 10 years ago, or actually more like 20 years ago now, Dr. Ken Kaiser comes in as the undersecretary at the VA and changes that system and puts a layer of middle management in to standardize practice. He put 23 regions in place, or what is now 23 regions in place, and it's not clear this is the right structure to harmonize the system, get it to work together, and allocate resources across the system. I think VA needs to relook that.
You suggest aligning them in some way, as you write, with the regions used by the Department of Health and Human Services or Department of Defense TRICARE system. The TRICARE idea in particular seems to resonate because this is, in many cases, how these men and women transition from the DOD healthcare system to the VA system.
Yeah, Francis, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, the big idea that's on the table that we are dancing around here is that we have dual systems. We have a Defense Department system that cares for 9.5 million service members, reservists, family members, and retirees. And then we have a VA system that cares for roughly 6 million or so veterans. And it's effectively the same population. There are some demographic differences. There are some differences in the age census of each population. But look, this is the group that joins and raises their right hand and enlists, and then some part of the federal government serves them and cares for them until they pass. And there's a good argument for more alignment of these two systems and more integration of these two systems and minimization of any transitions or barriers or obstacles between them as they provide care.
All right. I don't mean to minimize numbers 4 and 5 on your list of items, ways to begin to fix the VA. Number 4, rebuild the VA's healthcare IT system. Number 5, integrate better with the private and nonprofit sector. And I encourage folks to go to federalnewsradio.com/in-depth and find the link for your piece on Slate so they can read those. But let's get right to the big gorilla then. Number 6 is to build a bridge across the Potomac, and that is to seek a more integrated, more harmonized relationship with the Department of Defense. And you put it very plainly. One of Shinseki's greatest failures belongs also to two other revered cabinet officers, former Defense Secretaries Robert Gates and Leon Panetta. Defense and the VA failed to create an integrated health record system and have failed more broadly to synchronize and align the two agencies' care for veteran service members and military families. What's the holdup there when both agencies obviously have the same stated goal, which is to serve these men and women that, as you just described a moment ago, are the same people, essentially?
It's a great question, and I think the answer is that both agencies see their mission differently. The Defense Department has its primary mission of protecting the nation and maintaining combat readiness and doing so around the world. And the VA frames its mission as serving veterans where they live, primarily inside the U.S. And that core focus has translated into very different agency approaches to IT and very different systems that could not be made to work despite the best efforts of, you know, thousands of individuals and billions of taxpayer dollars. The Defense Department has a procurement that's slated to launch sometime in the next few weeks or months that could solve part of this, but it depends on how the Defense Department goes. They're going to procure a new health information system that could talk very clearly to the VA or talk more easily to the private sector if they went with a commercial option. It's not clear whether they're going to prioritize those requirements or whether they're simply going to meet procure a system that can meet Defense Department requirements.
And I'm working from memory here, Phil, but my memory is that whatever they do, whatever solution they wind up with, they're not talking about any kind of beginning of implementation until 2017 or 18. So we're still years away from any kind of a potential solution.
We're years away, and you know, there's a certain absurdity to this because we live in 2014. This is the era of big data, and software providers and other companies can actually make these things happen much faster. But the agencies and their procurement bureaucracies move at a glacial pace. And the folks that suffer remain the service members and veterans who have to transition between these systems. Now aided by things like Blue Button, they don't actually have to carry paper copies of their records. They can hit a Blue Button and download a copy. But still, that's absurd. We should have a system that allows service members and veterans to get care from each agency in a way that the information is shared.
Phil, your list is very thoughtful, as always, and it's great to have you on to talk about it. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Francis.
Phil Carter, Senior Fellow, Counsel, and Director of the Military Veterans and Society Program at the Center for a New American Security. You can read what he's writing in Slate at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We have a link to it later this afternoon, and my conversation with Phil will be up there, too.